Purushaha, such a person. Stabdaha, being dull-minded. Lokam, the three worlds. Mamcha, unto me also. Abhamanyate, derides. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, my dear Lord, Brahma, because of material opulence, a foolish person becomes dull-witted and mad. Thus he has no respect for anyone within the three worlds and defies even my authority. To such a person, I show special favor by first taking away all his possessions. Purport. A civilization that has become godless because of material advancement and opulence is extremely dangerous. Because of great opulence, a materialist becomes so proud that he has no regard for anyone and even refuses to accept the authority of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The result of such a mentality is certainly very dangerous. To show special favor, the Lord sometimes makes an example of someone like Bali Maharaj, who was now bereft of all his possessions. So here Prabhupada says this is a dangerous position to be in, or a civilization which is mad after material opulence is dangerous. And Prabhupada also said that Krishna is dangerous. And why is Krishna dangerous? Because he takes away wealth. So Prabhupada was giving a lecture on Queen Kunti, and Queen Kunti, we know she prays that this desire for material opulence makes one mad, and you can't utter Krishna's name wholeheartedly if that's what you aspire for. So in that lecture, Prabhupada made the same point, that how Krishna may take wealth away if it's going to help a devotee. And then Prabhupada ended that little section by saying, this Krishna, he's very dangerous. So we'd rather have the dangerous Krishna taking something away than the material opulence being a danger for us spiritually. So how is material opulence dangerous? Well, here's something Prabhupada says in the Krishna book about Shankasura. You remember Shankasura? Why was Shankasura proud? Anybody remember why? Yes? He had this jewel. It was like sometimes maybe a woman may have a beautiful necklace and then she, you know, full of precious stones, and then she'll walk around and maybe become a little proud. Or a man will have a $10,000 suit on or whatever and become proud. So Sankashuddha had this special jewel. So he'd strut around with his jewel and he was proud. So this is what Prabhupada says about that. Generally in the material world, a person with riches thinks that all beautiful women should be enjoyed by him, because this was what Sankashura also thought, that since he belonged to the rich community of Kuvera, he, not Krishna and Balaram, should enjoy the company of so many beautiful girls. So, in many ways, in many places, Prabhupada talks about the dangers of having too much money. So here's another thing Prabhupada says in the Krishna book. Too much wealth makes a man selfish. Selfish man is not prepared to take to Krishna consciousness and is condemned by great devotees like Sukadeva. In other words, possession of too many worldly riches is a disqualification for advancement in Krishna consciousness for ordinary person, because he becomes selfish, he becomes proud, he thinks he's better than other people. Generally, for some reason, people who have money think they're better. This is like Prabhupada tells the joke. One man asked another man, are you intelligent? And so the man looked in his pocket. And he said, why are you looking in your pocket? And he said, well, if I'm intelligent, I should have money in my pocket. I should be rich. So we equate intelligence with wealth, or equate wealth with intelligence. If I'm smart, if I'm intelligent, if I'm qualified, if I'm capable, I should have money. I should make money. And in our society, we have a word for people who don't make a lot of money, and we call them losers. You drive by some old shack and you look and think, oh, this guy's a loser. You see some guy driving an old car and smoke's coming out of the rear end, it's all beat up, the paint's peeling off. You think, this guy's a loser. Because that's how our society equates value. At least one of the standards is, if you have wealth, you're a winner. You must be intelligent, you must be cultured, and so forth. And of course, in Vedic society, things are different. So, interesting thing is that I went to my computer and I found that I had collected over the years 27 pages of files on wealth. So last night and this morning I read them. And one thing that became very clear, that all the things that Prabhupada said we should do about wealth really most of them are virtually impossible to do within our society, because it's all within the context of Vedic culture. So, for example, sudras aren't given money, because if you give them money, what do they do with it? They support your local liquor barn. Right? So they're supported, they're taken care of, but they don't have much money. And in our society, how does it work? What did George Bush say after 9/11? He said, go shopping. So that's how we evaluate the health of our society, by how many people are out spending money. Because, you know, there's this big danger in the world, America's been demoralized, and this is what our president has to tell us. Don't let Al-Qaeda think that we have given up, that you can damage our society, that you can stop us, and the way we're going to show them is we're going to go shopping. So get out there and spend your money and show them that they can't stop us. So, that was another thing that was very clear from reading all these letters. In fact, I don't even know where to find everything, but if I can find something, I would rather read it than try to paraphrase it. So, one of the things that came up in reading all these letters is that Prabhupada didn't want us to complicate our life, particularly in terms of how we make money, and he didn't, either individually or as a temple. So he said a few things, and it was very, very kind of interesting to look at this. One situation, very interesting, because Prabhupada started the spiritual sky incense business. It was his idea as a means for grihasthas to support themselves. So I was living in LA at the time, and basically the way it worked is that all the grihasthas lived across the street from the temple, and any of the grihasthas who wanted could work at Spiritual Sky. So it was a way, simplified life. You just work with devotees from 9 to 5, and then you have the whole, you know, the way the schedule worked, you go to the whole morning program and whole evening program. People went morning, evening in those days. So the business was doing very well, so they expanded into soap, oils, and then they started doing jewelry. And then Prabhupada got upset because they were complicating something that was working in a simple way. This is really interesting, because you think from a business point of view, expand more. You've got a good market, so expand. Diversify, multiple streams of income. You know, you hear all these things. And he was upset. He said, why did you complicate this? You had something that was simple. And what you see from the other letters that Prabhupada was writing about earning money is his fear that it was going to get in the way of sadhana. Because the more complicated it becomes, the more expansive it becomes, the more work is required, the more time is required, and so he was concerned. So he said, I didn't want that. Why did you do this? But you would think he'd be happy. Well, Prabhupada, we're making more money. He said, no, you complicated. It was already enough. So Prabhupada said, Krishna was already sending enough money. Why did you complicate it? So, then another thing that Prabhupada said, which I found interesting, he said, in Vedic culture, when people made money, they didn't build big houses. They didn't live lavishly. That was all for the temples. He said only the kings lived that way. Nobody else lived that way. Everybody else lived simply, and they would use all that money to build big temples. Interesting. It was a different consciousness. And you see this, any country you go to that has a large population of Hindus, you see practically every mile there's a temple. Right? In Guyana, right? Because, you know, and most of these temples, or a lot of these temples, are built by individuals. Well, what organization is that? No, he just built it. And, you know, you see sometimes his house is in the back and the temple's in the front. Right? Some places. Or some small organization or individual. So they have that mentality. Okay, we have money, what should we do with it? Build a big house or build a temple? No, we'll build a temple. So you see, you've been to Mauritius, you see, you know, every few miles, and I was just in Guyana, every few miles there's a temple. In India, the temples are everywhere. Now I have a couple of stories, which I have been very, for me, have been very powerful. I was in Vrindavan in 1987, and at that time they were raising money for the Goshala, and then Abhay, who used to live here, he was doing fundraising in the temple, trying to, you know, heat up the atmosphere so people would give money. And so people said, I'll give 500 rupees, I'll give 1,000. So the atmosphere was heated up, and one devotee gave large donation, which I think was equivalent of about $20,000 to the Goshala, $20,000 or $30,000. And so I met that devotee accidentally. We met on the train. We were both going from Mathura to Delhi. And he confided in me, and he said, you know, he's a business person, and he had a lot of money, and he had a lot more money than he needed. And he confided in me, and he said, that money was weighing heavy on my heart. He said, and when I gave it in the donation, I felt this great intense relief and this great surcharge of spiritual energy by doing that. I always remembered that. It's very instructive, the way he felt that wealth was a burden, because he understood on some level that money was meant for Krishna service, and I was holding on to it. And when he let it go, he said, I just felt this intense relief. And I remember that story. Maybe you remember that story, Gaurakishordas Babaji. He was being carried around on the shoulders of someone, and a man came and gave him a donation, like 1 rupee or something. And so he held on to it, and after 5 minutes he said, find that man and give him the money back. And they gave the money back, and he said to this man, he said, carrying this money was such a burden. He said, I don't know how you can do it. He says, I don't want it. It's just disturbing me. So when this devotee told me that, I was thinking the same thing, that in many ways money is a disturbance if it's not used properly. Then another story, which is even more powerful. I was staying with another devotee, he's a very wealthy businessman, and he was lecturing to me for hours. I mean, not lecturing, but he was explaining his philosophy, but in some way lecturing. And he was saying, all this money we earn, it's our duty as grihasthas, all this money to support the preaching. And he was just going on and on. And he said, you know, this is what I've always done, and Krishna's always provided, and going on and on. And then he told me this story. It was this quite amazing story. He said, my Guru Maharaj was doing this big project, and he was short about $30,000, so he called me up and said, so-and-so, can you give the money? And the devotee went to his bank, and in his bank account he had like $29,336, and he cleaned the whole bank account out. And he said, I had no money to pay my bills. I had nothing. But I gave it. And he said, that next week my business went shooting through the roof and all this money came in. So he said, that's been my realization. It's always been my realization. That's the purpose of wealth. And when I give it, that's my dharma, and Krishna always takes care of me. So those are two stories that have always had a very profound effect on me. And then in reading these letters that Prabhupada has written, he's making this point again and again, which is the KISS principle, keep it simple, stupid. You know, just don't complicate your life so much that it becomes about maintenance, and then there's no sadhana. And then there's that one letter or one conversation in which a devotee said, Prabhupada, you know, you are encouraging the book distributors. They always get encouragement. And we know, any of us who lived through those days, we know that so many letters came to encourage book distribution. But there was a contingency of devotees who were doing business. And he said, but we don't get encouraged, so you know, we need some encouragement. And Prabhupada said, you don't need encouragement. He says, because by your nature, that's what you do. You are overly encouraged to work hard and make money. So why should I encourage you to do business? If I encourage you to business, you're already doing it probably 8, 10, 12, 15 hours a day. If I encourage you, you'll become even more obsessed. So then Prabhupada said, you don't need encouragement in that. You need encouragement in your sadhana. Because that's the weak side. Working passionately is not the weak side. Sadhana is the weak side. So he said, I'm not going to encourage you in business. I'm going to encourage you in your sadhana. So in these conversations and letters, we can see that that's the point that Prabhupada is always making. There's a fine line between this effort or endeavor to acquire wealth according to what you need and then according to what you want. Now, we have discussed in the story about Bali Vamana's statement that if I'm not satisfied with 3 steps of land, how will I be satisfied with the whole universe? I found out something very interesting. I found this out from a lady who was a global fundraiser, and she rubbed shoulders with billionaires. So billionaires is like an interesting phenomena. That's 1,000 bank accounts with $1 million in each account. Right? Not a billionaire? 1,000 million. I mean, you know, it's like, just imagine. Prabhu, could you donate $1 million? What the heck? It's only 1,000th of what I have. That's like a tremendous amount of money. And then you consider, okay, just consider for a minute, if I had if you weren't a devotee, you had $1 billion, it's like, well, what would I do with $1 billion? You know, you'd run out of ideas after a while. Well, I get a house in Acapulco, I get a yacht here, you know, house in Brent, you know, whatever, you know. You just like, this car, I got a pool here, you know. You just like run out of ideas. Even, you know, practically giving in charity, you'd run out of ideas. So she said that studies have shown that the average person thinks, if I just had 30% more income, I'd be okay. So anyone you ask, say 30% more would be enough. That'd be enough. And you think about it. Well, I don't really have enough, but you know, if I just had 30% more, then I could fix this and you know, fix that and sell this car. You know. So she said the interesting thing was, on that level of these global billionaires, they still think the same way. If I just had 30% more, I'd be okay. And you'd think, when you hit a certain level, it's just okay, that's it. So they actually are in that frame of mind also. So she had written some books on money, and she realized or came up with a theory that what's going on to make our economy work is that we have ingrained, culturally, we have programmed people to think there's never enough and more is better. And if we don't think that way, this economy will collapse. Those are the pillars upon which our economy is based. So she said it's so amazing that even on that level of billionaires, they think that way. You know, so you may think, well, if I just work a little harder, make a little more money, then I'll be satisfied because then I can sell my old car, move out of my shack. Said even on that level, the disease is so strong. Then she said another amazing thing, which I don't know how to verify this. It seems inconceivable. Not inconceivable, it doesn't seem accurate. She said that this message, you don't have enough, more is better, is being sent to us through the media 30,000 messages every day. I thought, how is 30,000 messages every day? How is that possible? And I thought, well, listen to the radio for an hour, you'll probably end up listening to a half hour of commercials, or at least 20 minutes, if not a half hour. And each commercial is 30 seconds. So you listen to 60 commercials, and if there were 10 messages in each commercial that you don't have enough and you're not happy because you don't have this, that's 600 messages in 1 hour. What to speak of all your friends who heard the same commercials who tell you the same thing. Oh, you should get this. You don't have enough. So we are walking around in our society program to think more is better, right? I have 27 pairs of shoes, but I go to the mall and there's another pair of shoes, and then it clicks in, more is better. I don't have enough shoes. So I need 29 pairs, because these shoes have this on it that my shoes don't. And if we're not programmed that way, the economy won't function. And the unfortunate thing is, we live in a society and we're subjected to this, grossly or subtly, we're also programmed. I think Prabhupada was, you know, concerned about it, because he definitely wanted us to live simply as far as possible. And it's not so easy when we're programmed to think more is better. And not only more money, but more everything. Sometimes more, less, we say less is more. So what does this all mean for devotees? Should we all sell our homes? Build thatched huts? Should we have a vote here? You know the story in Australia when Prabhupada went, he was given a flat to stay in, small flat. And then he went, I think it was 2-bedroom. Maybe three, maximum 3-bedroom flat. You know that story? And he went in the flat. He saw this. He looked, they showed him around. He said, Prabhupada, this is where you're staying and your servants will stay in these rooms and so forth. And Prabhupada said, this is nice. How many families live here? And he was totally serious. So when you really study this issue, you really see that Prabhupada did want us to live simply. Now, there's another very interesting phenomena, which, of course, we use the word anartha, which means, and anartha can be applied in many ways, but one aspect of anartha is just you have something which is extraneous, you don't really need it. So there's an interesting phenomena going on in our country, which you may be participating in to some degree or have participated in, in that they have these little gated communities all around America. It's the fastest growing business now, these little gated communities. But people don't live in these gated communities. And who lives in these gated communities are all the things that people don't need, that they can't find a place for in their closets or their garages. And these are called storage areas. You know those gated communities? But you need the combination to get in, and they have the little houses to store all the things that people couldn't find places in their drawers and closets and storage sheds in their backyard and garages. And in America, other people don't have places to live, but the wealthy people have places for their things that they don't need to live. So that's really, they should call those, What do they call those places? Storage? What's the self-storage? They should change the name to anarthapod or something. Anarthapuri or whatever. So, you know, of course sometimes people are moving and they put their stuff there, but this is, you know, and Prabhupada has written about this, and he said, not directly about this, but he, in one lecture or letter, he said, in India, if you buy a cloth and it's a little too long and you have to hem it, they won't cut the cloth. They'll just hem the cloth up like this much, like a foot up. Because you never know when you'll need that cloth, right? Because you might have a hole in your pants. And you know, he said, in America, you just cut it and throw it away. And he said, in India, if something breaks, they fix it. In America, if it breaks, you throw it away because you have money. So you don't have to fix it. You can just, you know, throw money at something. He said, you throw money at everything, and it looks like you're together and you're expert, but you're just throwing money at stuff, and you're throwing stuff away, and you're not taking care of it. So he had criticized how we use money. So anyway, also we see how in many places in the Bhagavatam there is this connection with pride and madness as described in this verse. The word madha means madness and bewilderment when there's too much money. And that's why sometimes Krishna has to level the playing field and take some of it away. And he doesn't always do it, but sometimes he does it just to maybe bring us down to another level and say, well, this is really the level you need to be on, and you're getting distracted. So there's always that concern that wealth, what did Prabhupada say? Wealth and women, from time immemorial, it's always been a problem for those advancing spiritually. It's been a problem for those not advancing spiritually. So you have Hiranyakashipu. It's a problem for everyone. So anyway, we'll end here. These are just some thoughts I had. Any discussion or questions? Yes?
One was commenting on American Express and their travel checks. He said, just see this company. They're so expert that you're ready to give your money and they give you a piece of paper. But because they're so reputed, you don't mind doing that. And while, as you know, you've got the travel checks, you haven't spent the money yet, they can use the money to do something with it. So you've actually given your money for just a piece of paper. But they're so expert that they've convinced you that it's worthwhile.
And, didn't he say that was lazy intelligence?
Yeah, maybe something
like
that.
Good
yeah.
Business.
Yeah. Another point is they were interviewing this African, this person living in Canada, and they were asking him, so what do you find strange in Canada? And the person said, well, the only thing I find really strange is this window shopping. People are bored, they have nothing to do, so they just go window shopping. You know, they go in the malls and they just space out all day and they just look and maybe they buy things they don't really need. He said, in Africa, you never see that. You know, people have nothing to do and just, so I really thought that was such a weird aspect of our culture. And that's what we see people doing. You know, we got money, we don't know what to do, we just go around and we often pick up something that we don't really need. Well, it was on sale or whatever, right. You know. And like you were saying, then we store it somewhere because we don't really need it, but it's just, we got it and might as well keep it. You know.
So well, the marketing experts say, generally people, when they buy something they don't need, they convince themselves they need it. So they'll come home and say, well, I really did need this 28th pair of shoes because my 27th is, you know, they're kind of wearing out and, you know, these ones are, you know, they help my back. So whenever you buy, he said, that's how marketing works. You have to get people to buy things they don't need and make them think they need it. And so that's what people do. They come, you come, and you'll see that, you know, a lot of times if you talk to your friends, they'll kind of try to rationalize why they bought something they didn't need. And then Roy Krishna was telling me he went into debt and he said, and the debt counselor said, well, it's okay to use a credit card, just use that for what you need. And then, but only pay cash for the things that you want. Because in that way you won't get into debt because you'll never be putting cash out for, because you think, well, do I really need this? Because you have to go through the credit card purchase or is it the cash purchase? And then you realize, oh, it's a cash purchase, and you go, oh, I guess I don't really need it, so maybe I shouldn't buy it. Because you only have a limited amount of cash, so you'll be more careful. You know, buyer's remorse, you know.
Somebody. Just one last point is that in the early days, Prabhupada really emphasized the importance of the mission rather than the individuals. Now it seems that we've shifted somewhat, that the individuals, you know, the devotees, individual, my needs, and so forth, have become more important than becoming Krishna conscious or spreading Krishna consciousness. And I think that we have to reevaluate sometimes.
Yeah, and it's, you know, also the more we have faith in Krishna providing, the more we can give to the mission without fear that we're less concerned how we'll maintain ourselves. My personal experience, I had personal experience that the more I give to the mission, the better my business would go. And there was no correlation with me necessarily doing anything. That I could see definitely Krishna would help me financially if I gave up time and energy that I could have used to increase my finances. I mean, it was very clear to me. And the less I gave to spreading Krishna consciousness, the more it was a struggle for me to maintain myself financially. And one thing happened, it was very mystical. I'm beginning to work with the japa retreats, and it was taking so much time. I was analyzing and said, I'm going into debt because I'm giving so much time to this. I said, Krishna, what's going on here? And then one of the people that I do business with, he sent me a shipment of products that I didn't order. And I called him. I said, why did you send this? And he said, just try it. And I go, I don't want this. You know, just try it. It's selling well. And from that point, my sales increased almost double because of that shipment I didn't order. And I said, oh, okay, Krishna, I was too stupid to order it because I didn't think it would sell. So he sent it to me. So in this way, I was seeing Krishna would do things and other things like that to help me because I was willing to sacrifice for the mission some of my time and energy that I could have used to make more money. And Krishna's, and right before that, I was working really hard to make money and I was making less. And so when I gave more time to spreading Krishna consciousness, I ended up making more. So it requires, you know, a little bit of faith as well. That's my personal experience. I don't know the economic policy for running every business. But what even, every book I've ever read on wealth building says you have to give. You won't get it if you don't give it. You either give your time or give your money. Everyone, even the gross material. I read one book, this guy was such a gross material. I'd never seen a Vaishya with this mentality, just cutthroat mentality. And he wrote a book, just totally cutthroat, how to make money. And he even said, I don't know why, but it works. You have to give money if you want to get wealthy. You have something? Lots of money?
One thing in regards to the advertising you were saying, how many did you say? How many?
She said 3,000, maybe 3,000 or 30,000.
Because one thing you should understand is that advertising doesn't only come through the television or the. I mean, you just walk outside, you drive down the road, you see it every
right,
single second.
Exactly.
Everybody's T-shirt is advertising something, and you know, everywhere
right.
you look, you're seeing something advertised, something you want, something you need, something you don't have yet. You know, I mean, it's just, it's ubiquitous. It's all over the place. So you do see that.
So it's possible 30,000 messages a day that you don't have enough. More is better.
Well, that's a lifestyle choice. And the numbers are not that every single person in the whole planet does that. But there's, you know, some average taken that. Collectively. And it depends where you go. You know, I mean, it's interesting because just recently I left Vrindavan. I was in Vrindavan for almost 5 months. And so then I left Vrindavan and I came through Schiphol Airport in Amsterdam. And the new, but becoming more and more prevalent even in Jacksonville is that every airport is now a shopping mall.
Right.
And in order to get you from point A to point B, they make it so that you have to spend some time in the shopping area. You don't even know what your gate is because you have to sit there and wait until they tell you. And so you're forced to kind of go. And everywhere in this airport, there are signs that say, see, buy, fly. They say everywhere, see, buy, fly. It's like a program, see, buy it, fly. And you see that everywhere, on the back of everything, on the front of everything, on every single pillar in the whole airport, everywhere. So I made up for my living in the country for 5 months by just being in that airport for 3.5 hours.
Well, another thing, speaking of the, what's it called, the Schiphol Airport? Yeah, we were there also. So, you know, you live in Vrindavan, you know, you spend a few $100 in a month on food, right? We spent, four of us, $200 in one day just to eat in Amsterdam. It was like outrageous. I couldn't, it was like, I could not. I was like, how do people live here? Seriously, we spent, you know, like a month's worth. Yes.
You have to go through like a retirement counseling thing just before you're about to retire. And when I retired, I think most officers, the average salary when you're about to retire is probably like $85,000 or $90,000 a year. And they were saying that you need to have at least 70% of this in your retirement. And I kept thinking, what will you do with 70% of $85,000 or $90,000 a year? Saying what, you know, then I thought, oh, they want people to keep buying same kind of stuff they've been buying.
Standard, yeah.
Because everybody was asking, you know, because I was leaving early and they were asking, well, what are you going to do? You're not going to have enough money and so forth and so on. And I kept thinking, boy, if you only knew how many devotees would take, you know, $50,000 a year.
Right. Yeah, it was funny. When my father left his body, my sister got all the money. You know, so that was the one of the side benefits of becoming a Hare Krishna. Is Krishna takes away everything, right? So at that time, you know, my overhead was like nothing. I was just living in the temple preaching in Los Angeles. You know, overhead was, you know, the temple was maintaining us. So, you know, I needed 500 or 1,000 a month at the most. So, you know, she got about $500,000 in investments and this and that. And she's like complaining. She says, I don't know how I'm going to live on this for the rest of my life. And I'm like, $500,000? I never saw more than a few thousand at one time in my life. And she's complaining. So it's like you say, you know, standard of living is so high. And I just found it interesting when Prabhupada was saying, people didn't used to live that way. They all lived, he said, even the Vaishyas lived simply. And even the Vaishyas didn't do business unless they had extra time after they cultivated the land and took care of the cows. That wasn't like, yeah, that's going to be our primary thing, make money. And then what's this money? I was talking to a guy the other day, and he said, I've studied economic history, and when economies fall, you have to get a wheelbarrow full of money to buy a loaf of bread and wheel it into the grocery store. So that's what happens to your paper money. And Prabhupada said, previously, when you go to the bank, they'd say, do you want it in gold, do you want it in silver, or do you want it in paper currency? You had a choice, because it was backed. And you could ask for it. You could get it in any way. So he said, you know, this is just history. When economies fall, you know, bars of gold buy bread. So, there's a lot to look forward to in terms of collecting paper. Green coupons, I don't know how much they're going to get us, but... Yes?
Krishna, I'm wondering how we can help the youth, and not just the younger children, but the Gurukuli community, to become more attracted to simple living, how we can inspire that. Because I come from a background of very simple living, as you know, living in the ghetto, and you don't get a whole lot simpler than that. But there's still that mentality of wanting more.
Right.
But how to bring that here to our community, to our youth community worldwide, and show them that simple living can be quite nice, quite desirable.
Well, I think it's a wonderful question. And I think the whole issue of money is really what needs to be at the foundation of the answer to this question of how, as devotees, and how, what is our view on money? How do we see money? How do we make it? How do we spend it? What do we do with it? What's it for? Well, what are the pitfalls of collecting it or over-collecting? I think that would really be, is really, and I, you know, I mean, it's there in Prabhupada's books. I've never really heard anybody address it holistically in this is the definitive way that we see money. And I think that would help a lot. just like this devotee who told me, you know, how he sees money as an energy used for preaching, and he's always seen it that way, and he makes a lot of money. And he lived in a simple two-bedroom apartment. He was making $40,000 a month. So I think that's also a good example, and people like that devotee can be very helpful in educating us about the use of money. Yes?
Talking about a minute ago, is that stay away from media, because when you're on Facebook or when you're all these places all the time, you're being sold a lifestyle, and you don't really realize it so much, but you buy that lifestyle, and so you're always thinking you need more. In many, many countries, including India, people were very satisfied with very little until they saw a television set, or until they saw a sitcom where, you know, they saw people who were living, they weren't really living that way, because, you know, people don't live that way, but they think, oh, this is what, and then they immediately become dissatisfied. And immediately their aspiration becomes to accumulate something, or to move into the city, to leave the country, and accumulate things. So as long as the young people are connected to that with the iPhone, the BlackBerry, the MP4 player, the telephone, here you, a Sunday Feast lecture, someone's giving a lecture, and these young Indian men are sitting there the whole lecture with their iPhones, you know, doing God knows what. You can log on, you can, you know, everything with this little thing in your hand. So, and then you're connected to a world that tells you that you cannot be happy unless you fill in the blanks with all kinds of garbage. So if you, to some extent, part of the solution is to associate with persons who value simplicity, as opposed to associating with people who value things. And, you know, we can talk about simple living and high thinking and rural living and all those things, but even without rural living, you can live very simply and you can spend very little. Because 90% of what you see, you don't need. When I did Sankirtan in Walmart, you'd say to people, oh, just spend a minute to do a meditation, how many things are in that store that you really need? And 90% of people would say, nothing. You know, but they were walking in there, they're going in there, and they got their cart, and they're ready to buy, but they don't need anything. So if you start thinking like that, instead of being told every minute that you need something, it really helps you to cool down that fire of desire.
Think of the youth, my husband's age, and so there was this lacking mentality early in the movement. Maybe children, their needs weren't taken care of. How can we meet their needs, still being youth in my mind, you know, and being adults? How can we meet their needs so that this is all desirable? That yes, not having a flat screen TV or an, you know, I don't even have those. That paraphernalia, I don't even own any of that, but it's attractive to me. How can we help that to be attractive to the youth so that we don't need the newest, even devotional attire, you know, like because even that fashion sense is coming into our spiritual community of needing the newest bling. Yeah.
Then Rangavati after Akuti.
I've thought about this a lot because I was trying to think of how we could have facilitate you know, some kind of a simple living and attract the youth, and really didn't come up with too many ideas. And I've asked the youth and you know, you have to have the higher taste for that. In other words, spiritually very satisfied and wanting to not give all energy to the material world, to keep it within ourselves. But I kind of came to the conclusion that I think we're just going to have to wait till we're forced.
Hare Krishna. Let Rangavati and then Kiana Gumbia? Well, we read that purport. Nanda read that purport last week or whenever. No. Yeah, Krishna's, you know, if it gets really bad, it's a fever. You know, materialism is a fever. If it gets bad, Krishna will just go, okay. That's enough. This society needs to straighten out.
Two things. Barshana Swami was telling us that there's actually in the dictionary a word that says affluenza.
Affluenza. Oh, it's in the dictionary now.
It's not influenza, it's affluenza. And the cure for affluenza is simple living and high thinking.
Jai.
And the other thing that I listened to a tape the other day, Prabhupada, I wanted to re-listen to it because I didn't exactly get the second part, but it's that you have your livelihood. That's one thing. It's not your life. It's not, you know, your devotional life. It's your livelihood life. So you have a craft or a trade, something you do, and then you have your spiritual life. Sometimes we get, you know, sucked into the whole package and we lose our sense of spiritual life because we're so absorbed in livelihood. But there's a clear distinction. So understanding that they are two different worlds may help, you know, in terms of younger people getting involved in something that they can make money with, but they keep it separate, in a sense, from their, you know, their spiritual life.
Simplified enough so it doesn't become their life. Yes, Kanagamya.
I think you should give a seminar on this. I think it'd be very nice. I know that the Christian churches emphasize this in a lot of their preaching ministries. You know, how to deal with credit card debts and so forth, how not to get sucked in. And they're very, very much aware, if you, like Lakshmi Mani was talking about the media, if you watch the media at all, you'll see a determined effort on the part of the media to debunk spiritual life in all different forms, you know. And their effort is basically you should become a consumer and forget about all this other stuff that's, you know, pie in the sky.
You know, it's really interesting that we used to be called citizens, now we're called consumers.
Yeah.
You listen to the radio and say, consumers are, they don't say citizens are anymore, they say consumers are. So what does that do in terms of programming?
It's like the police used to be called peace officers, but now they're called law enforcement officers, or agents. So the law, of course, in this country is all about, you know, material wealth and maintaining it. Not transgressing it and not stealing it and so forth, but basically it's a godless kind of law. So we're in a, you know, a real war, actually, you can say. And so if we don't take on an effort to educate the young, especially about this, I remember one time I was just appalled. One devotee told me he was $25,000 in debt, you know, with credit cards. And I was really shocked, you know. I just couldn't believe that anybody could go in that direction. But it comes, you know, with being totally naive. I get my credit card report every month. I pay off all my credit cards immediately. But it says, you know, you owe $1,000, you have to pay at least $25. And all that doesn't even pay the total interest. It just allows you to continue. You know, they've heard from you, they know you're alive. They allow you to continue to run up incredible debt. And people are just completely naive about this. They have no idea. They thought, oh, I'm paying the minimum. You know, I thought that's all I had to do, and then they find out they're, you know, $20,000 in debt. So devotees need to be aware of these. This is really a scam, and the interest rate used to be regulated. Now it's gone absolutely. They can charge almost anything they want. So usury used to be defined as charging over 20%. Now these credit card things are up to 25-30% sometimes. So devotees need to be aware of this. It's a very practical part of their education, and you seem to be very qualified to give them a seminar on this.
So when I get out of debt, I'll give the seminar. Because I can't teach anything I don't do. No, I've thought about it. I don't know if I'm the most qualified person, but the average debt per person in America is 9,000 credit card debt. So family of four, you know, 32,000. That's the average. And India's now beginning. You can get credit now. Someone else wanted to say something? Disease, fire, and death. Yeah, Chanukka.
I got the microphone. Okay. Hare Krishna. I got the microphone.
Well, one thing about the earlier talks about donations and everything, there is Sanskrit praman for that. I think, although it's, I think it's just Chanakya, or, I mean, but whatever, Durdranashanam Danam, that the poverty is destroyed by charity.
Oh, nice.
And one other thing is that commenting about this simple living, high thinking, at the same time, I think Ganagamya mentioned education, because spiritual education is the real solution. Because we have to also remember Rupa Goswami's very important instructions on Yukta Vairagyam and Falgu Vairagya, that we shouldn't artificially reject things that are can be used to, in Krishna's service, and rather they should be continued to be used in Krishna's service, and not see them as material. So we have to remember that, those instructions too.
One thing too, I think, is I mean, bottom line is that people are going to really do what they're inspired to do. People pick up a pack of cigarettes, and clearly it says that it's, you know, not good for your health, but inspired by the desire to enjoy smoking, people smoke anyway. So you really cannot, by having money or not having money, living opulently or living simply, affect how a person is going to be. They have to genuinely be inspired. So Bhagavad Gita has said, Rasa Vrajam Rasa Pyasha Param Jashana Vartate. If there's a deep understanding of Krishna consciousness, and the youth, adults, old people, if they're absorbed in that, that's going to be the hallmark thing that makes you want to spend your money there. It makes you want to absorb your time there. You can't do that by any other means, not just even by this is the best thing for you to do, because people don't do what's best for them. They do what they want to do. If they did what was best for them, they wouldn't have come to the material world. So we have to find a way to inspire, like devotees, when we, like I remember living in Los Angeles in 75 also, and a milk crate and a sleeping bag was your property, and that was considered like wonderful. You could just stack your books together in the milk crate and have that area that you cleaned every day. That was enough. But people were so inspired because the books were coming out. Everybody was hearing so many new things. Everybody was very inspired by the process itself. So that's what makes people say, I'll spend my money here. I won't become absorbed in TV. I won't do this. I won't do that. Not simply because it's not the right thing to do. You have to be inspired by the depth of bhakti.
Yeah, that's a good point. Also, the point in which Prabhupada makes, which is very clear, that you're destined to earn a certain amount of money no matter how hard you work. So that also can keep balance in our life. It's like, I'm going crazy to earn this money, but I just lost, you know, $50,000 because Krishna, you know, I wasn't supposed to have it. Yes.
If we look at the underlying principle of why people spend, and it's because they feel insecure. That's the real reason. Either you don't like yourself, so you're insecure about that, or you feel threatened. And we see in America especially, there's so many TV programs about police and people getting arrested. There's police everywhere. So people feel very insecure. So when you buy things, you feel secure. You feel like, okay, now I've got something that's going to protect me. And for us, many of us, when Prabhupada was on the planet, we felt so secure, right. We didn't need anything. Prabhupada was there. What was the problem? There was no problem.
Yeah, it's also an emotional experience. Like you say, you feel secure. It also makes you feel warm and fuzzy when you come out of the store with a big bunch of, isn't it? It's like Christmas. And they got all this stuff. And then you got to read how to use it, and it breaks down and needs I got to go get batteries for it. And then, you know, I got to spend 3 hours figuring out. And then, oh, if there's something wrong, I have to take it back. It's, you know. So where did my day go today? You know? Just buying something. We better end here. But if we want to discuss afterwards, that's maybe this is an inspiration to talk more on this subject. Thank you, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.